Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer, your host for this week's show.
Your soil has a unique story. At Decisive Farming by TELUS Agriculture, we get that. Start using precise nutrient information to get optimal crop performance. Try our variable rate program risk-free today. Visit decisivefarming.com. Conditions apply.
Spring is a time of hope, renewal, and apparently renewable diesel. On this week's show, we'll discuss a proposed mega project for Regina, which will convert canola oil into diesel fuel. We'll also talk about an Alberta company that's planning to manufacture fiberboard from wheat straw. Finally, Phil Franz Workington of Glacier Markets Farm will tell us if canola prices have hit a peak and if they're about to plummet off that peak. Even for someone like Bill Gates, $2.4 billion is a large pile of cash. That's why a $2.4 billion renewable diesel plant proposed for Regina has sparked a great deal of coffee shop chatter across Saskatchewan. True North Renewable Fuels, a Calgary company, is raising funds to build the plant, which will use canola oil to make renewable diesel. Doug Cole is the president and CEO of True North. He joins us from Calgary to share more information about his proposal and why his company is pursuing this mega project. Hey, Doug, thanks for coming on Between the Rows. I appreciate it.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks for your interest.
So what can you tell me about True North Renewable Fuels and what you're proposing to build in Regina?
Sure. So True North Renewables, we're a Calgary-based company, and we're trying to advance development of a renewable distillate fuel project, particularly Canada, but Regina is really the key location for us. We're trying to look at a facility about 1 billion liters a year. That's roughly, say, 20,000 barrels a day of renewable fuels. And we primarily use canola oil as a feedstock. We can also use soybean oil or animal fat to produce renewable diesel fuel and renewable jet fuel.
So let's just talk about that for a second. Like, what is renewable diesel? How is that different from biodiesel?
Sure. So biodiesel was kind of the first generation of a green distillate fuel. And it was made by taking animal fats or canola oil and reacting it with methanol. And that made a product called methyl ester. And think of methyl ester as being like diesel fuel laced with oxygen. And there's some limitations when you do that, limitations in winter use. It tends to degrade pretty quickly, and there's blending limits with it. Renewable, on the other hand, we take the same feedstock, but we react it with hydrogen, and it produces hydrocarbons just like diesel or jet fuel, but it doesn't have that same limitation. But because it's a biosource, then it's a low carbon fuel, because the CO2 that gets produced when you combust the fuel goes back in and gets photosynthesized by the plant into the oil that the plant produces. So it's a low carbon fuel, but it's much more like a regular fossil fuel from your engine's point of view.
Okay, so what does that low carbon fuel or that status mean in terms of, like, I guess, benefits and also in terms of government rules and regulations?
Well, the government rules, Government of Canada is bringing in a new clean fuel standard. And that clean fuel standard, what it does is to say that all the fuels we're going to use over the next decade will ultimately have about a 13% lower emissions or lower life cycle emissions. They call it carbon intensity. So by 2030, every fuel, all the gasoline and all the diesel fuel we burn will be have their emissions reduced by 13%.
Okay. So,
and our fuel,
go ahead.
When we use fuel from canola oil or soybeans, has a much, much, much higher reduction than that. It's probably an 80% reduction over fossil fuels.
Okay.
So that, the big thing is, a plant our size, say 20,000 barrels a day of renewable diesel fuel, would be the equivalent of taking about 650,000 cars off the road. And it creates a market for roughly 1 million tons a year of canola oil domestically.
Okay. So I guess, you know, one of the concerns around biodiesel in the past has been this whole issue of blending. But just to make this clear for people. Renewable diesel is not a blend product. It's just something that's a replacement for diesel. Is that correct?
That's correct. Now, it can be blended depending on what the needs of the customer are. But there are cities such as San Diego, for example, in California, or Vancouver, that have switched their diesel fleets over to 100% renewable diesel and have had a lot of success with that.
Okay.
And that has been really these low-carbon fuel standards. That's what's done the bulk of the heavy lifting to reduce transportation emissions in California. And Canada's now, BC's had it in place for some time. Canada's now moving towards implementing that type of legislation.
So I guess that leads to my next question is that, does the business plan or the business case for this renewable diesel facility, does it basically hinge on Canada moving forward with these new standards, these new clean fuel standards?
Well, I think Canada certainly needs to move forward with ways to reduce transportation fuel emissions. And this goes a long way to helping that. But there's other initiatives too. The California market's increasing reducing their life cycle carbon intensity specification on transportation fuels over time. There's a number of U.S. states that are starting to implement similar legislation. There was even discussion under the new U.S. administration to replace their renewable fuel standard with a low carbon type legislation. So Canada in and of itself probably doesn't have to, but I think it certainly adds credibility to the Canadian market.
So just to reiterate then the opportunity for this Regina plant is bigger than just Western Canada, like the market's larger than just the Canadian opportunity.
Certainly it is, and particularly in the aviation space as well. The same process can be tuned to produce a renewable aviation or sustainable aviation fuel.
Okay.
And that market, certainly in the longer term, that market has less flexibility for other types of GHG reducing initiatives, such as electrification, or hydrogen. Those type of technologies are a long way off for aviation.
Okay.
This is a very good solution for that market.
So obviously what has caught a lot of people's attention when it comes to this proposed renewable diesel plant in Regina is the price tag of $2.4 billion. Can you briefly explain the cost and how you're raising funds to build this project?
Sure. So the $2.4 billion, I'll point out, that's not just the renewable fuel facility. That's actually a kind of an integrated protein supercluster concept. So that would include, an expansion or new crush facilities, canola crush facilities. It would include protein extraction. And there's certainly newer technologies that can make better use of canola protein than the typical canola meal that's now used for the dairy cattle industry, as well as our refinery. We're certainly, a big part of that, 2.4, but that includes sort of the full build out of that complex.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a big price tag. The capital for our segment of it, we would be looking, for conventional private capital world for that.
Okay. So more of a personal question here. Like, I understand you worked in the oil and gas industry for a number of years. Why are you involved in this project? What excites you about this opportunity?
Well, a few things. You're right. I spent about 35 years as an engineer in Canada and internationally in the oil and gas upstream business. But a number of years back, I started looking. Somebody brought to me an idea of biodiesel. And I looked at that. And at that time, Canada's requirements were pretty minimal. It was a 2% requirement. And the industry was really built out on production subsidies. So when I looked south towards, to California and what they were doing there, and I looked to what Public Consultation Environment and Climate Change Canada had done, we saw this clean fuel standard coming into Canada. But what we didn't see was anybody trying to develop a Canadian domiciled industry. The U.S. industry was being built out and European industry was being built out, but nothing was really happening here. So we saw that as an opportunity, but also as a way to keep value added here in Canada. I think it's essential that we start to keep more of our value added here in Canada. And we can do that here with our ag products, with canola, to if we build out the additional crush, the protein extraction, and the renewable fuel. That really creates a large value add for particularly for the Regina region. And now with trying to come out of COVID, it's all the more essential that we do these type of value add projects here in Canada.
So put another way, instead of shipping our canola seed to Europe where they turn it into diesel fuel, we can do that here at home.
Yes, and I'll give you another example. Most of the Western Canadian animal fats are aggregated through the West Coast, and they're shipped historically to Singapore. And Neste, they're a Finnish refiner. They convert it to renewable fuel, and they actually export most of that back to North America.
Hmm.
So currently Canada is importing all its renewable diesel fuel from either Singapore or the United States. And I'd really want to see this project stay here in Canada and keep the jobs and the value add here. And that's really, I think, what's driving me to make this project a reality.
Okay, so I have to ask this question. If everything goes according to plan, when would construction possibly start on this project?
Well, probably a year after we're completed our current financing phase. That front-end engineering work takes about 12 months to execute on. Construction will probably take construction and ramp-up, say, 30 months from then. We're targeting production for 2025, and that kind of coincides when the clean fuel standard starts to ramp up and require more of these renewable fuel products in the market here in Canada.
All right, Doug. Well, thanks for coming on Between the Rows. I really appreciate your time and sharing this information with us.
My pleasure, Robert.
Cheers. That was Doug Cole, CEO of True North Renewable Fuels, a company planning to build a renewable diesel plant in Regina, Saskatchewan. I'm Robert Arneson, and this is Between the Rows. Next up, Alberta farmers grow more than 7 million acres of wheat every year, but the straw from that wheat isn't used to its full potential. That could soon change. Great Plains MDF, an Alberta company, plans to build a plant near Trochu that will manufacture fiberboard from wheat straw. Jennifer Blair, a reporter for Alberta Farmer Express, has been following this story. She joined us from her home in Red Deer. Hey, Jennifer, thanks for coming on Between the Rows. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you did a story recently about this proposed fiberboard plant in Alberta. Can you just tell us a bit more about it? What company is behind it? What will it use as feedstock? That sort of thing.
This is such a cool project that's going up near Trochu. Great Plains MDF plans to convert roughly 800,000 tons of wheat straw into medium density fiberboard once it's up and running in the next few years. So the company is also exploring using barley and possibly canola straw in their formulation, but they're not quite there yet. They're pretty sure that these other types of straw will work, but they've got still got some testing to do to make sure that the quality is going to be there. So for now, wheat straw is their focus.
Okay, and so fiberboard, just remind me again what fiberboard is. So that's something that's going to be used in like home construction or furniture, or what is fiberboard exactly? What is it used for?
So it's definitely used mostly for home construction and furniture, and that's probably where most people would be familiar with it.
Okay, and so this company, is it an Alberta company, or what's their story?
Yeah, so they're hoping to actually be prairie wide. They're planning on right now, you know, they have the facility going up near Trochu, but once they're operational, they're hoping to be, you know, Great Plains MDF. They're hoping to be cross prairies.
Okay, and remind me again of the price tag to construct this facility.
Now the price tag is pretty substantial, sort of just looking it up here. So the price tag on this is going to be $800 million. So obviously quite a big boom for Alberta.
And this company says they have the financing in place, or are they still fundraising? Where is that at?
So right now, their Great Plains MDF is hoping to start construction in the fourth quarter of this year, with the first of two production lines operational by mid-2023. So their second production line is expected to be up and running mid to late 2024. So they're close to ready to breaking ground. They're almost there.
Okay, so this looks like it's happening. This is just not really a proposal. This is actually getting very real.
Yes, yeah. So they're right now they're working to gather producer feedback and try to get as much sense of what kind of supply might be available in their area. You know, they want to work really closely with the producers in the area to source their straw. So it's going to be really exciting for producers in the Trochu area.
So being on this side of the prairies, I know there was a fiberboard plant, or rather a straw fiberboard plant, west of Winnipeg in the 1990s. But I believe that plant went bankrupt after a couple of years. What's different now in the market for straw-based fiberboard?
So I ended up learning a lot about the market for fiberboard for this story, and the demand for this type of fiberboard is huge right now, and they're not expecting it to taper off over the next kind of 5 to 8 years. So that's partly because of the pandemic, which, you know, created a slowdown in production that kind of tightened supplies that are out there, but it's also because of millennials. So, you know, millennials, and there are, you know, a huge number of them out there are entering their prime home buying years. And so that's increasing demand for fiberboard for new homes. So, you know, aside from that increased demand for fiberboard that we're seeing, the product that's going to be produced in Trochu is just a little bit different than what's been produced in the past. You know, I visited fiberboard facilities myself and thought it was such an exciting novel use for these products, and then nothing ever seemed to really come from them. But those past products were more of a lower cost particle board, which didn't really meet the quality standards of North American builders. So the quality of this fiber board is better. Plus, you know, you have the sustainability aspect of it. You know, the conversation around sustainability has changed a lot over the past 30 years. So, you know, consumers want more renewable, locally sourced products, and they're willing to pay a little bit more for them now. And so this straw-based fiberboard sort of fits that bill. So, you know, we're seeing incredible demand and, you know, hopefully enough supply to meet that demand over the next 5 to 8 years.
So just from my understanding, the sustainability angle is that the feedstock, or the straw in this case, is renewable. It's something that is grown. And I guess a competitive product would be trees, right? That's the how the other type of fiberboard is made. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I know that they've tried to use these, you know, different types of straw in the past. But yeah, right now, kind of the comparable would be to wood. And, you know, obviously, when you're growing wheat or barley, you're getting, at least here in Alberta, at least, you're getting a crop a year. With trees, you know, it takes upwards 10, 15 years, I think, to produce that crop. So, you know, you have a really readily renewable resource that you know, that they're able to draw from the local area. I think that's a really great sustainability story.
So last one, I guess the question is, what does this all mean for farmers in Alberta?
So, you know, what this means for farmers in Alberta, I think, is a new market for their straw. You know, I know a lot of farmers are using their straw to improve the soil, or, you know, for things like bedding. And I know that Great Plains MDF isn't hoping to compete with that. You know, they're really just hoping to take the extra straw that farmers aren't currently using. So it gives farmers a market, and hopefully a good market, for a product that they're not likely using already.
All right. Well, thanks for telling us all about this, Jennifer. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thanks again for having me.
That was Jennifer Blair, a reporter with Alberta Farmer Express, talking about a proposed $800 million fiberboard plant in Trochu, Alberta. Well, after months of up, up, and up, canola prices may finally have hit a ceiling. Market analysts are now wondering if canola futures will decline gradually, or if prices will fall off a cliff. Here to discuss canola and other news from the commodity markets is Phil Franz Workington, a reporter with Glacier Markets Farm. Hey, Phil, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me.
So, as we all know, the huge story in the markets in 2021 has been the continuous rise of canola futures. You know, it's been, I guess, 3 months or more of upward prices. Is there starting to become a sense in the market that prices have hit a wall and that maybe there's going to be a decline? What's the feeling right now?
Yeah, we've been saying that for months, that as it keeps going up, it's hitting unprecedented levels every week, it seems. So it's been saying for a long time, it looks like the highs could be coming in, and then that proves false the next week as prices go higher again. This past week, it has been showing a bit of signs of kind of running into some resistance at the top there. It's a few days in a row, the May contract is the most active now. It's hovering right above that $800 mark, which, you know, only a year ago would be like, well, that's crazy, $800. But it has been higher, and it's showing signs of having trouble breaking much above that right now. That said, the underlying issues that have supported prices all along haven't disappeared, so the support is still there, and a downturn will eventually come, but when that happens and how quick that happens is anybody's guess right now.
So I just read a piece yesterday, actually in my publication, The Western Producer, of an analyst saying, well, he thinks that prices are going to basically fall off a cliff, so that when there is a decline, it's going to be very sharp. What are your thoughts? Do you think this is going to be sort of a gradual thing, or will it be quite kind of like a complete sort of like hit the peak and then go over the peak and then, you know, sort of cascade down the other side? What's your sense of that?
Well, I think you could make an argument either way. In the past, we've had run-ups like this, and then, yes, it does drop fairly suddenly when it does drop. I think the one thing that might be different about this rally is that there is a lot of fun speculative money at play, but that it's more the story is less about the kind of technical money, which can enter and exit quickly, and more to do with the fundamentals. Canola supplies are getting tight, and the exports are running at a record pace. The domestic crush is pretty solid, so the demand is there, and the supplies are dwindling, and they need to make sure that prices stay firm, or they'll run out of canola is the fear. So that could cause the things to slow down on the downturn, but that said, soon the snow's melting, soon another crop is going in the ground, and at these prices, you know, there's going to be a lot of canola seeded, no doubt, and if the weather cooperates and we have a huge crop next year or this summer, fall, then the high prices cure high prices, as the saying goes, and then the canola goes down again. So that would be more the new crop contracts. And, you know, there's a wide spread between the old crop and the new crop right now. So it would seem to me that the nearby months will stay supported until, you know, inevitably the buying just backs away and the end users are, say, forget this, and we're turning our attention to new crop. And so that could lead to a sudden fall, but the story of tight supplies remains, and that should keep things supported and slow the move down, at least on the nearby contracts. And then the new crop is a different story, and that could be will depend on seeding and weather and all those good things.
So let's just shift to soybean oil for a second. So yeah. you know, I had a quick look at the soybean oil chart this morning. You know, it's kind of quite similar to canola. It's been going up and up and up and up. What is the main driver there? Like, what's happening in the global, you know, vegetable oil market that's really supporting soybean oil right now?
Yeah, there's the demand is there for vegetable oil, and part of it has to do with palm oil. That's often seen as sort of a large driver of world vegetable oil markets. Palm oil supplies are tight right now, and their prices have been hitting at multi-year highs. I think 13-year highs I saw the other day. So that's kind of a driver on the veg oil market. And then on top of it as well, there have been concerns over South America's soybean crops and Argentina especially. They are a big player on world exports of soy oil and soy meal. And they've been dry, and there's been concerns about they won't have as much oil to export, and that's been underpinning things there as well. One thing to note on the soy oil, canola is at its highest levels ever, soy oil is still, you know, at least a good 15 cents off its record highs. So there's more possible room to the upside there, but at the same time, showing signs of running out of steam a bit to the upside, as, you know, while there are weather concerns in South America, they're currently harvesting their crops down there, and there's going to be an abundance of soybeans soon available to be turned into oil and meal, which will even if the supplies are tighter than originally thought, they'll still be pretty large.
Okay. So let's just move on to wheat. So wheat hasn't received nearly as much attention as canola over the last few months, but, you know, it seems like wheat is trading sideways since about January. What do you think is expected in the next couple little while here? Is that sideways pattern likely to stay and persist, or are there signs of weakness in the sort of the wheat futures market? What do you see there?
Yeah, it's been, generally, like you said, sideways for the past few months. Over the past week or two, there's been a bit of a downward trend in the wheat futures. That's tied in part to in the U.S. plains. They've seen some good moisture lately, and that's helping improve the quality ratings on their winter wheat as it's exiting dormancy. So one interesting thing I've noticed on this all winter, spring wheat has been the cheapest of all of the wheats because the winter wheats have been seeing all the excitement and strength, and spring wheat has lagging, and that's spring wheat is steady as them all, but is not falling to the same extent as the winter wheats. And, that's partially due to the North American spring wheat crops haven't been seeded yet. So, and there is a fairly dry conditions going into the ground in the big spring wheat area. So that'll be something to watch there going forward, how that the spring wheat crops play out. But right now, as winter wheat around the world is, or in the Northern Hemisphere at least, is exiting dormancy, and there have been concerns over the winter, but it's generally the trend right now seems to be, or the takeaway seems to be, that the crops survive the winter fairly well and are looking okay heading into the growing season, and that's something that'll weigh on prices. But watching the weather over the next while on wheat will be key, I would think.
All right. Well, thanks, Phil. I've been speaking with Phil Franz Workington, a reporter with Glacier Markets Farm. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's show, the last one of winter 2021. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
Your soil has a unique story. At Decisive Farming by TELUS Agriculture, we get that. Start using precise nutrient information to get optimal crop performance. Try our variable rate program risk-free today. Visit decisivefarming.com. Conditions apply.